listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Wisconsin's parks and natural areas aren't always accessible to people with physical disabilities, but there are efforts to improve things. The founder of Access Ability Wisconsin tells us what's working well and where there's room for improvement. Now the first pay-what-you-can museum restaurant in Wisconsin, maybe the nation, just opened at the Madison Children's Museum. The restaurant is called Little John's Lunchbox. It's open to museum guests and anyone in the community. Jonathan Zerov is Director of Marketing Communications for the Madison Children's Museum. Jonathan, thanks for joining us.
Hello, thanks for having us.
And Dave Heide is founder of Little John's, the nonprofit Pay What You Can restaurant. He's also executive chef at Liliana's. Chef Dave, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much. Good to be back.
Well, I think I talked to you a few years ago, and you're getting rolling with this Pay What You Can restaurant model. Can you talk about what motivated you to pursue that?
Yeah, I think a lot of people think of a restaurateur as someone who makes a lot of money and does well, but we definitely had our struggles throughout all of it, and our whole family had a lot of food insecurity throughout the owning of the restaurant. So, you know, I think there's a, especially in Dane County where we are, I think there's a big kind of misconception that there isn't food insecurity because you don't see it everywhere, but there's actually a lot of food insecurity. The school that my youngest, John, goes to, 66% of the kids there are below the poverty line, with the majority of them experiencing food insecurity. So I think it was kind of to help get rid of that stigma of what food security looks like. And I think that's one of the reasons why the pairing works so well at the Children's Museum. You know, I know a lot of people see the Children's Museum and they see some families who have a lot of money and they're like, well, why would you go there? There are so many families in need. And I say, like, the Children's Museum is amazing because it's the same prospect that we go at, which is, you know, you can't tell what food insecurity looks like. It's the same thing with poverty. You can't tell what poverty looks like. So the Children's Museum has a ton of programs to help get people who don't have enough resources into the museum.
Jonathan, why was it important for the Madison Children's Museum to have this accessibility option, this pay-what-you-can meal option?
Well, Chef Dave says we've been concerned about accessibility and sustainability, which is also a shared value, for a long time. And we have programs like $1 admission, $15 memberships, a free first-time parent membership. All those are part of our Access for Everyone program. And we know that we run lately between 25 and 30% of our visitors are using one of those programs. So absolutely, there's need. And you can't play on an empty stomach. You can't play and learn well. You know, so our missions were so aligned that it just and we needed a cafe. Right. We had a cafe before the pandemic. We shut down. We hadn't figured out what kind of new cafe to have. So this was the perfect mission based kind of cafe. Whereas before we had kind of more of a revenue, you know, goal with it. Now this is very mission based.
And Chef Dave, talk us through. A parent comes in with their kids. They walk up to the restaurant. What do they see? What do they do?
See a three-door cooler that's filled with meals that are made every single day. We drop off at the Children's Museum. And then there's a microwave bank there that they can heat them up. And then there's a terminal where they can pay what they can, or there's a drop box for them to drop cash if they don't want to pay with credit. And it really is pay what you can. So the idea of pay what you can is that those who have can maybe help contribute a little bit more to help sustain our meals and help sustain the museum. And then those who don't have can pay what they can. So whether that's $100, which I think we had a couple people already pay $100 for a cookie, which is fantastic, or whether it's a dollar or whether it's nothing. The reason we wanted to have the terminals is because there is a barrier to food access if you've got a human you've got to interact with. So we wanted to have it be as accessible for anyone and to not have anyone feel judged if they want to get a fresh made from scratch meal for their kid.
And Jonathan, this just opened up late last week, I believe. What's the response been so far?
Well, we also had a soft open for a little bit. There were a lot of new things to work out for this because there's no models to really look to. But the response has been great. I think one of my favorite comments was, we love the ease and the mac and cheese. But a lot of people have pointed out that they just love that we're doing this, either, you know, because they need it or they just are so happy that we're doing it on behalf of the community. Really, it's all been positive.
And Chef Dave, I know another part of this story is food waste. You don't like it. And sustainability, you do like that. How is that showing up at this Little John's Pay What You Can restaurant?
Oh, it's been great. So our mission at Little John's is we create access with excess. So Americans throw away 40% of all food produced in the United States, and that's pre-consumer. So we work with grocery stores to take amazing produce and ingredients, which, to be honest, are even better than some of the stuff I can get at Liliana's, even the excess, and cook it and turn it into chef-made meals. So it's been really great. And I think, I know that there's the perception, the first off when you hear food excess, you think food waste or food garbage, and that's the opposite of what we're getting. We're getting like amazing dairy, amazing produce, proteins, and the food tastes great. And if you don't believe me, come try a meal at the Children's Museum.
And Jonathan, as we wrap up, if somebody's listening and they run, maybe it's a museum or other institution and thinking, hey, this is something our community could use, what would you suggest to them on getting started?
They should probably talk to us because there weren't a lot of people to talk to. I mean, even the payment system, most of them are retail or their donations. And this sort of has to blend them both. We'd be happy to talk to people about it. But it's been going really well, and we really haven't had problems with it, and it's just had an excellent reception.
Jonathan, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Chef Dave, good to talk to you. Hope we can get you on a Food Friday again sometime.
Anytime. Literally anytime. Love chatting with you guys.
We're talking to Dave Heide, chef and founder of the new Pay What You Can restaurant and nonprofit Little John's. He's also executive chef at the restaurant Liliana's. And Jonathan Zeroff, director of marketing communications for the Madison Children's Museum. They join us to talk about the first Pay What You Can restaurant in a Wisconsin museum, possibly the first one in any museum in the country. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Mary Kate McCoy with a story about embracing adventure and letting go.
You don't have to travel far to find adventure. Writer Jill Susan Quinn and her son recently spent an afternoon at a local park where he had a run-in with both stinging nettle and a fallen log, causing her to reflect on the lessons to be found in independence and letting go.
I take my son to Stedman Wayside Park in Portage County. I happened upon it once 15 years ago and haven't been there since. That was after I'd just moved to Wisconsin from a place and at an age where I measured hikes in tens of miles and thousands of feet in elevation gain. Stedman's trailless 24 acres, with its single grill and picnic table, was a puzzle I was not equipped at the time to understand. Now the mother of a 7-year-old, my priorities have changed. As soon as he steps from the car, my son begins to forge a path downstream from the Tomorrow River's small waterfall, alternating between the riverbank's deep mud and lush foliage and the water's large rocks and fallen logs. I point out skunk cabbage and tear off a section of leaf for him to smell. He points out a tiny shoot of crystal clear water pouring from the steep hillside beneath a tree's raised roots. All of a sudden, I notice the underside of his forearm is covered with alarming red dots. My eye glides over to a jagged-leaved plant. "Stinging nettle!" I exclaim. He's seen it before, but this is his first time touching it. We kneel down and cover his arm in black mud from the river's bottom. I pick off a few stems of jewelweed and offer the plant's aloe-like salve, but he has already moved on. The forest becomes too thick, and he turns to make his way back upstream. I pull out my phone to take a photo. I watch as he slips on a mossy log over the water, grabs it with both hands and both feet, and rolls completely under, hanging like a baby chimpanzee beneath its mother's belly. The creek wets him from the collar of his t-shirt to the tops of his boots. "Let go," I say. And he does, rights himself, and wades out, flinging off water and laughing with joy at his soaked body. Back at the car, I suggest viewing the river from the road. We walk there, and he wants to go down to the water again. We descend beneath the road bridge to the piles of granite beneath. My son begins to launch the rocks into the river, seeming to enjoy this place and pastime even more than exploring the official park. Watching him, I remember how much time I spent as a child under bridges. Railroad bridges out of use, railroad bridges in use, road bridges. With my best friend, the neighbor boys, and my older sisters, I climbed over guardrails and jumped onto concrete pylons, followed their gentle declines, careful not to slip, to the riprap beneath, avoided snakes and poison ivy to cast my father's old fishing rod and plunge into deep, dark swimming holes. Once, my friend and I scientifically narrowed down from a patch of weeds near a particular bridge just which plant was making us itch. Our first time, like my son today, with stinging nettle. We touched it repeatedly, laughing gleefully at the plant's fierce but short-lived war against our skin. This, I think, is what my son needs more than anything. Not a hike with his plant-identifying mother on a recognized trail with a destination, but a bike, a friend, and bridges to climb under. He needs a rushing creek to receive his skipped stones, baited hooks, and half-clothed body. The adult world just a rumble above as cars pass to and fro toward unnecessary destinations, their hum an untranslatable language, like the mumbling of the parents in the classic Peanuts cartoon. And what I need is to be fearless and non-critical, to stop ignoring the waysides, to let my son's world expand to wherever he wishes, to as close or as far as he can pedal without me, to as high or as low as he wants to climb, to as large or as small and as secret a place as he can find.
Jill Sisson-Quinn is an author who teaches writing at Mid-State Technical College and lives in Scandinavia, Wisconsin. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org. I'm Mary Kate McCoy.
It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. When the COVID-19 pandemic hit, the highest percent of Americans ever recorded, 53% explored outdoor spaces like parks and wildlife centers. That's according to the Outdoor Industry Association. But enjoying those outdoor spaces can still be a challenge for a lot of people, including some people with physical disabilities. There might be better access to outdoor wheelchairs in some places or accessible restrooms, but there's still a long way to go before everyone's able to access outdoor spaces. Monica Spaney is founder and president of Accessibility Wisconsin. She's an environmental advocate and recently was awarded the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation Conservationist of the Year in 2022. Monica, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
When we talk about creating better accessibility in the outdoors here in Wisconsin, what are some of the first things that come to your mind?
Well, I'll tell you what doesn't come to my mind is paving nature and putting down, you know, paved trails. But what comes to mind is adaptive equipment like outdoor wheelchairs that can navigate through that more natural space.
Yeah, you shared a video with one of these outdoor wheelchairs. This was new to me. Can you talk about this and describe it a little? It's not your everyday wheelchair you're going to see.
Correct. This is a wheelchair that has like tank-like tracks, but it goes walking speed. And the advantage of it is that it tilts. So if you're going up a hill, you can tilt to be level. Or if you're going down a hill, you can tilt to be level. It has five speeds. And so if you're going through over a log, you can slowly go over the log at a slower speed. And then if the trail is nice and mowed, you can walk with your family and social connections where you're participating actively together.
What was it like for you the first time you took one of these for a spin and went out on a trail that previously would not have been an option for you?
It was wow. Because I was with my husband at the time, and he was like, you should follow the ATV, because they were going through the corn stalks and everything. And I'm like, I ain't going where the ATV is going. I'm going where I want to go. And so it was a relief to him, because he didn't have to worry about the burden of me falling out of my mobility device. I just happened to be a wheelchair user, but it could be a walker, it could be a cane, it could be somebody with COPD. So he wasn't worried. He was with me. We could hold hands and I could actively participate and watch the birds or the deer or the pheasants. It was awesome, Rob.
Now, how available are these, I guess, all-terrain wheelchairs in natural areas at this point?
They're not very readily available in Wisconsin. We started AAW, Accessibility Wisconsin, in 2014 and got our very first wheelchair so that people could use. The problem is the cost. These outdoor wheelchairs cost over, with the enclosed trailer, over $25,000. Now, if you're an individual with some kind of mobility issue, you tend to need an accessible restroom or doors to go through or an accessible vehicle, and all of that costs extra. You're looking at a good $50,000 or more. It could be even $150,000. So now take the cost of these hiking boots for people with mobility challenges. They're $25,000. Would you pay $25,000 for hiking boots that then you have to take to a location with a truck or something that can tow a trailer to be able to do that?
Probably not. So I understand you at Accessibility Wisconsin are working with nature centers and other places. What kind of what have you seen so far? Who's participating in this so far?
Sure. We actually have three nature centers that are our host locations. So they host the chair and trailer there. People can check the chair and trailer out and take it to a location, or they can use it on location if they don't have the ability to tow. And we have won awards for coming up with this model. It's a new type of model.
Are you hoping it's going to spread now to more nature centers and conservation areas?
Yes, we're a nature center in Milwaukee, and we have Ozaukee County River Edge Nature Center. We have Beaver Creek and Eau Claire, and we're continuing to work with other nature centers. So if you know of a nature center that we should work with, let us know. It's advantageous to partner so that their nature center is more accessible and people are able to get out and have healthy living and participate in the programming just like everyone else.
Talking to Monica Spaney, founder and president of Accessibility Wisconsin. She won the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation Conservationist of the Year in 2022, looking at accessibility in natural areas in Wisconsin. Monica, apart from these all-terrain nature wheelchairs, I guess tread chairs, really, they're not wheels, what other efforts are you focusing on this year?
Well, we're always focusing on partnering with organizations, because our goal is to get one chair and trailer in every county. And right now we have 24. So we get that funding with grants and matching memorial donations or general donations. So we work hard to get more chairs and more trailers so that people can use them all across Wisconsin. We want people to be able to visit and see those nature centers and participate, and then it also increases a positive outlook for our Wisconsin residents and decreases depression. So it's equity, healthy living, inclusion, and access.
So I want to get your message to a few different groups here. First of all, if somebody is involved in managing a natural area and wants, says, hey, this would be cool, where do they start? How do they start getting involved in this?
Go to our website, accessabilitywi.org, click on hosting. We have a whole bunch of hosting opportunities.
And then for people who think, yeah, I want to do this, I haven't been able to hike on a trail in a long time, how can they keep track of where they can go and find these things?
Yes, if you go out to our website, we have a map page that shows the AAW network and the counties that we serve. So you could check it out at a location close to you, or if you're going to visit a location, you can check it out at the location that you're visiting.
And then if there are people out there who want to support the effort, your website would probably be a good start, but can people help out and contribute to being able to provide these things in natural areas?
Yes, we have a donation page and people can donate. As I said, there are a variety of ways of donating their time. So please get involved. Donating their money, or down the road if they want to do a memorial fund. So we're looking at it from all directions, sir.
And can you tell us more about the technology itself? Are we seeing advancements in these kind of accessible wheelchairs that can go more and cooler places and be more convenient for their users?
Yes, there are advances both in accessories. There are advances. We're looking at how the tilt can, the product is built in Minnesota. So they're looking at how the tilt can be more automatic. There's an attendant control for people who can't control a joystick. There's seatbelt extenders, different size chairs, and we also have a standing chair. If I answered your question correctly.
Sure. And can you talk about more about who you're working with? I understand, among others, disability organizations, the parks themselves, and veterans groups. Can you talk about the coalition you're bringing together to try to make this a reality?
Yes, our objective is to partner not only with senior centers. We're also working on Marathon County, trying to get the Hmong community and the tribal communities involved. We are working in Milwaukee to try to get more access in the urban area, seeing what we can do. So our partners have included everything from sportsmen's clubs to nature centers. And we've also worked with the Madison Audubon Society to make their events more accessible, the Wisconsin Natural Resources Foundation to make their field trips accessible. And we're always working with the DNR to help make both the state parks and their events accessible.
Monica, we'll leave it there. Thanks for sharing this with us today.
Thank you for having me, Rob, and I look forward to talking about other opportunities.
That's Monica Spaney, founder and president of Access Ability Wisconsin. Monica joined us today to talk about outdoor accessibility, what it looks like here in Wisconsin, and an effort to increase that accessibility around the state.